Welcome to the presentation of a lecture from Gnostic Radio, a free public service from Telema Press. Gnostic Radio broadcasts free lectures from the Gnostic tradition of Samael on Vior. Gnosis is the root wisdom of all the world's great religions. Gnosis is a universal doctrine containing the precise science to free the soul from suffering. Each lecture explores another aspect of this timeless and sacred knowledge. Many of these lectures are supported by additional information on our website. Each Saturday, Gnostic Radio broadcasts live. The live lecture is accompanied by an anonymous chat session, allowing listeners to read additional explanations related to the lecture and providing an opportunity to ask questions of the speaker. All of the efforts of Telema Press are supported by listeners like you. For more information or to make a donation, visit our website at GnosticTeachings.org. Now, with heartfelt wishes for the end of suffering for all creatures, we will begin the lecture. May all beings be happy.
All right. The wheel of samsara. Retribution. They are canon number 10, which is related with the letter, the Hebrew letter Yod. We are arriving at the very bottom of the tree of life, according with the 10 sephirot, which is a sephirah malkut, the kingdom, which in relation with the four worlds of Kabbalah, four manifested worlds, is the world of Asiya, the world of matter in action. In many of the lectures, we always refer to the laws of evolution and involution. And here, of course, when we explain the descent or the ray of creation from the Ein Sof Or down into Malkut, we call it involution. The way in which the forces of the ray of creation descend into matter in different dimensions. To finally arrive to the three-dimensional world, which is the world in which we live. In the previous lectures, we explained this, that our planet is baptized with the name of Earth, And we explain that it is called Earth because according with the cosmic rounds or involution of the matter into the different dimensions to finally arrive to the three-dimensional world, it takes, of course, a series of events or involvements of the ray of creation in different dimensions. What? So we said in other lectures that in Kabbalah we talk about the three main letters related with the elements: air, fire, and water, which are Aleph, Shin, and Mem. And each of these letters is related Kabbalistically and Gnostically speaking, which three previous rounds, cosmic rounds, the first round, which was related with the letter Aleph, the second round, which was related with the letter Shin, the third related with the letter Mem. In other words, air, fire, water. Because now we are in the fourth round, or fourth manifestation, we will say, of matter in this three-dimensional world, which is the terrestrial round. And that's why the planet Earth is called Earth. But it is the outcome of these three previous manifestations, according to the involution of the ray of creation, to finally arrive at this level in which we are. From here, we have to go up into the higher dimensions. And that is the involvement of the spirit into the matter in order to acquire knowledge, gnosis, in order to acquire knowledge of itself, because that is the objective of creation, to awake and to acquire knowledge of itself. The spirit itself, that in Kabbalah, in Hebrew, is called Elohim, of course, is a plural name, which means gods and goddesses, attributes. And each one of us has his own particular individual Elohim. So then, this Elohim acquired knowledge to the different rounds in order to return into the absolute, which is the unknowable city. When we talk about the absolute, which is beyond Keter, the crowned, we find there, as you see in the Tree of Life in this picture, the Ein Sof, and the Ein Sof Or, the three aspects of the unknowable divine. This unknowable divine is a city. Behold here that we are not saying deity, because deity is that word which is related to the manifested Elohim. But city is that which is unknowable, is not a deity, has no form, is related with the abstract, absolute space. This is precisely what in Gnosticism we state Moses refers at Elohim. Elohim is the origin of Elohim. In Buddhism, Elohim received the name of Adi Buddha, and Elohim received the name of Buddha. So here we find, of course, that from Adi Buddha emerges Buddha. From Elohim emerges Elohim and descend into the tree of life in order to manifest itself in different levels in every sephirah. But this is, of course, what we call the multiple perfect unity. When arriving at the level of Malkut, we have to study then how this ray of creation manifests, especially in this fourth round in which we are right now, especially in our terrestrial round, which the book of Genesis, written by Moses, explains in different steps. Because Genesis itself is a book of Kabbalah and Adgimi. That's why in the beginning, in Genesis, Moses refers to two trees. Tree of life, which is this, 10 sephirah, along with the 22 letters given by the angel Metraton. And the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which is Da'at, the sephirah of mystery, which means knowledge in Hebrew, which is Gnosis in Greek. So the study of Da'at and the tree of life got together because they are rooted in the same energy, which is the Ein Sof, or the limitless light. This Ein Sof Or, it's necessary to state here, that is called in Latin Lucifer, which means carrier of light, or barrier of light. Is that light that starts from above and goes down into the very nine sphere, in the center of the earth, that in the previous lecture the former speaker referred to it in wild detail. So that Ein Sof Or, which is unknowable, become knowable through one Dat, which is precisely here in this letter, or this card, of the ten, which is the letter Yod. The Yod is precisely that Dat, which is Keter, the crown. And in the meaning of that word, Yod, Hebrew, Kabbalistic word, you find the explanation of how that Yod develops and comes down into the matter. Because the letter Yod is written with Yod, Vav, and Dalet, which letters were already explained in previous lectures. So the Yod is the Dat that emerges from the unknowable and extends in the tree of life with the letter Vav to finally arrive at Dalet, which is the outcome of evolution, or the objective, which is the terrestrial man. Because in Malkuth, we find, of course, the philosophical Earth, not only the planet Earth, but the philosophical Earth. And that philosophical Earth is the human being itself, the terrestrial man. So when you read Earth in the Bible, sometimes it's referred to the planet itself and to the terrestrial man itself, the human being that lives in this three-dimensional world. Because in the level in which we are right now, we will say, according to evolution, that's the summit of evolution. Because remember that the ray of creation descends into the planet and starts to evolve, to mean to return into its own source. Mechanically, it does it through the mineral kingdom, plant kingdom, animal kingdom, to finally arrive at the human kingdom. We will say, to be more specific, to the level of the humanoid or intellectual animal, which has the privilege to keep ahead and rising in the, or returning that light, and to create inside of him the human being, the true human being. And that light will return again. But that comes from Dalet, which is the terrestrial man. And from that terrestrial man goes up into the different Sephiroth, and that's how that light returns. But of course, the mechanical laws of nature, evolution, reaches only to the humanoid. Beyond that, we need the assistance of divinity. We need the assistance of that Yod. But where? In which part of this Dalet or terrestrial man is that Yod hidden? Kabbalistically, we said, is hidden within Tet. And we explained that Tet is related with Yesod, which is that serpent, or that fire that hides the Yod, the power of God, the power of Keter, the father of all the lights. And that Yod is in Yesod. And Yesod is the center, the ninth sphere. And behold here, to explain better, do you hear the word, or do you read the word Yesod in Hebrew? It's exactly at Yod, with the only difference that has a Samech, which is a serpent eating its own tail, the sign of infinity. That's the only difference between Yod and Yesod. So this is how Yod, the word Yod, is hidden within Samech, the sign of the infinite. And that's why it is written that the symbol of Keter is a circle with a dot in the middle, which explains Yesod and Keter at the same time. And explains also how Malkuth is related with the number 10. Because this Yod descends in all the Sephiroth to finally arrive to the 10th in order to make his own body, the body of Keter. But this Keter that comes from above becomes hidden within the serpent in the sexual force to finally return into his own source. And that's precisely the meaning of the whole creation, to return the force to his own source. Keter, Yod, has to return. But in the sex, is hidden in potentiality, not in activity. In the same way that we have, for instance, the sperm and the ovum in our sexual organs, that each sperm and each ovum together, they have the capability or the potentiality or becoming a human being. If there is activity, which is a sexual act, and eventually sperm and the ovum will come a human being, physically speaking. In the same way, that potency is hidden within the sex, and we know how to return and transform it inside of us, we'll go back. And to attain and to the civilization of our own particular monad. This is how the Lord descends and helps us. That's why the letter 10 is related with EO. And this EO is a androgenism, lunar solar androgenism. The letter I, which reminds us the number one, is the man. And the letter O is the female, which is the uterus. By uniting EO, we have the number 10, meaning that between the man and the woman is hidden, the EO. That's why in alchemy, there's always different symbolism related with EO, related with the moon and the sun. Adam and Eve, Od and Ob, Yin Yang, Hunapu and Xbalanque. The different religions have different symbols. Ida and Pingala. So here we find that this transformation that the Yod does through its neck, which is Samech, in Malkut, in Asia, is explained in the Bible, Kabbalistically, alchemistically, in different levels. Let us remember, for instance, Noah and the Ark. The story of Noah and the Ark, of course, is not a story that we find only in the Bible, the Hebrew Bible. We find that story of the universal flood in different religions. If you read, for instance, the Popol Vuh, it's written there how humanity was destroyed by a great universal flood. If you read Greek mythology, you also find the same story, how Deucalion was saved with his wife Pyrrha from the great deluge. And each one of them had different symbols, alchemistically speaking, related with this transformation. So when you read the story of Noah and his ark, this is a transformation that the couple has to pass when they know the Ark Anum, the Ark of the Covenant, which is a secret of alchemy. Many people in different times, different epochs, they're trying to find the famous Ark of Noah in Asia. But obviously, that ark, they never find, because that is a symbol. Such an ark, as is written literally in Genesis, never existed physically. It's a symbol. But people, of course, that ignore the symbols of alchemy and Kabbalah, they think that was really an ark. Let us remember that at that age, when that supposed ark was built physically, there were in the earth dinosaurs. Only a couple of those dinosaurs will be enough, or will be enough in order to sink that ark into the bottom of the ocean. Only a couple of them. What about a couple of all the rest of the animals? So we have to study, of course, Kabbalistically, that thing, but this lecture is not related with it. Just mention it. That universal flood is related with different cataclysms that happened in the Atlantean epoch. The Atlantean civilization, Moses called it Egypt, or to be more specific, Mazarim. This word begins with M and ends with M, or we will say it begins with Mem and ends with Mem. And between the two Mems, there is a word Sari, which is that moist or smoked or offering related with the balsam tree, which hides the meaning of Atlantis. Because the Atlantean civilization were children of the mist, which are very clear referred in the opera of Wagner, The Ring of the Nibelungen, or The Ring of the Children of the Mist, which were the Atlanteans, because their atmosphere were more aqueous. Aqueous, related with water. Aqueous. You understand? More watery. Because the planet at that time was, of course, in constant transformation. It is said that the steam of the atmosphere of the Atlantean civilization was going up because of the heat of the fires of the planet in the center. But when where they were touching the cold space, they were returning into the ground. And this is how that civilization, the Atlantean civilization, they didn't have the same kind of atmosphere that we have here, very clear. It was something like when the clouds go down and it's very humid, kind of that type of atmosphere. That's why it is written that the Atlantean civilization, they were using, the fish gills, like the fish, in order to breed, because the atmosphere more watery than us, or we breathe air.
Or humid.
At that time, many cataclysms happened, because Atlantis is not, like many people think, an island there in Greece. Somebody found an island that is similar to what Plato described in his writings. But the right thing is this. Atlantis was a huge continent that existed in what now we name the Atlantean Ocean. Of course, in the beginning of the Atlantean civilization, that continent was uniting the south of the United States, Mexico, the north of South America, with Spain, the north of Africa, and Europe. There was a huge continent. Of course, many cataclysms happened, specifically four cataclysms. in which part of those of that land were sinking into the Atlantic, what we call now Atlantic Ocean. And precisely, when we read the Bible, we read only about one cataclysm, about one universal flood, because it's referring to the way in which humanity transformed itself in order to become a human being, or saved from the flood of degeneration, which is the symbol of it. But of course, when the Bible talks about Noah, he appears in the middle of the Atlantean civilization. And this, of course, is not at the end. Because every root race, as you know, has seven sub-races. And Noah appears in the fourth sub-race of the Atlantean civilization. I mean, Noah represents, of course, a great master that organized there in the Atlantean civilization a new root race. Because eventually that root race, the great avatars, cosmic creators, angels, archangels, knew very well the transformation of the earth, and eventually the whole Atlantis, this whole Atlantean continent will disappear. So they prepared. Why didn't they knew that? Because when Noah appeared in Atlantis, there were already two cataclysms. So the Atlantean continent was not the same when Noah appears. And that's why they knew about the sinking of the continent. The last event of the sinking of that Atlantean continent into the waters of the Atlantic Ocean is written symbolically, alchemically, kabbalistically in the departure of Moses with all the Israelites from Egypt. This is something very necessary to understand, because Egypt as exists right now, I mean, Moses, when he wrote that, is referring to Egypt as Mazarim, which is precisely that land between the waters. Of course, Egypt, as we know it right now, we know very well that existed close to the Nile at that time. But symbolically, in different books, we always refer to Mazarim, Egypt, related with the waters. And in Genesis says that the promised land that was going to appear in the future was similar to Egypt, or similar to Mazarim. Of course, that's related that the promised land was going to be between the waters as well. But here you find all the symbolism that is hidden within the whole story about the reality, because Atlantean civilization sank into the ocean, which is, in the Bible, Egypt. But the last event I'm telling you, is when Moses leaves Egypt into the promised land, which is precisely the new civilization, the Aryan civilization in the Gobi Desert, which the Master Samael Onbeor explains very in detail in the book The Revolution of Beelzebub. Of course, when Noah appears there in the middle of the Atlantean civilization, the Atlanteans were, of course, seen as we see now, the knowledge, the arc of the knowledge that we are teaching now. Noah, that in Sanskrit they call it the Manu Vaisvasvata, was teaching, along with many others, great masters, the great arcanum, the great knowledge, in order to save the souls. So he was building the ark, but was a great army of Atlantean people which were, of course, the Shemites. Who were the Shemites? Shemites were the crossing of the fourth sub-race of the Atlantean civilization with the Hyperboreans. They were the Hyperboreans living in the north of Europe, which were, of course, at that time, survivors of the previous root races of the earth. And the White Lodge selected the Hyperboreans in order to cross them with the Atlanteans in the fourth sub-race. And from that, which is the symbol of Noah, came Shem, the Shemites. But the other two are the other sub-races that existed in the Atlantean civilization. Of course, at that time, with the knowledge, many souls were being transformed in the earth, in Malkut, in Egypt, in Atlantis, because they were promised to them a new land. And they were arriving on that new land with the working, with the work in themselves. The new land, of course, is the land of Malkut, but not in the lower level in which we are right now. Because let us look right now, for instance, we are in Malkut, in the three-dimensional world. But if we examine the laws that control this Malkut in this very moment, we discover that this Malkut is controlled by 96 laws. Normally, the world of Asia, Malkut, is controlled by 48. You know that. But 96 is related with the first layer of hell, the first layer of Klipoth, limbo. So we are in Malkut, but related with limbo. The Bible refers to those areas of Klipoth in Genesis as Sodom and Gomorrah, which are cities, or we said civilization, that existed in the past as well, but who vibrated, not with Malkut as it should be, but with the Klipoth, as we are right now. This whole civilization of the earth is a Sodomist civilization, a Gomorrah civilization. Because Sodom and Gomorrah were two cities that were, of course, practicing degeneration, specifically sexual degeneration. And if you see everywhere in this day and age, we are in this two-dimensional world, but we are not governed by 48 laws, but 96, which is limbo, where fornication and adultery is normal, is a law. Nobody scandals in hell when somebody is an adulterer or a fornicator. It's normal. But here, above Malkut, in the Tree of Life, fornication and adultery is a sin. Nobody can enter there if it's an adulterer or a fornicator, have any sexual degeneration. In order to enter there, the great universal flood has to come and to kill all of those unfaithful ones, which is something, a work that we have to perform in each one of us. So now we are, of course, symbolically speaking, as we said in many other lectures, in Egypt, which is a land which is between the waters, but filthy waters, because it's a flood of negative forces. This is why we have to understand. Remember that it's written that in the time of Noah, when he saved himself with his family, which means with the salvation army that he formed in the Atlantean civilization, because through the ark he formed it, when he arrived at the Valley of Shinar, or what we say at the Mount Ararat, which is something symbolic related with Keter. The top of the tree of life is Ararat. Top of the head is where the energies had to rise to go up in order to be saved, esoterically speaking. But there were people, it's written there, after Noah organized all of the Salvation Army and saved himself and all the people that were following him, practicing the great Arcanum, there were people that were gathering and they were building a tower, which is called the Tower of Babel. Tower of Babel. Babel, of course, is a way in which people try to save themselves in the wrong way, thinking that by building this, by building that, they will be saved by the universal flood. So you see, for instance, the most of the Atlantean buildings were made in the shape of pyramids. Because at that time, there were a lot of floods. And the pyramid buildings are made in that way, not only, of course, in the esoteric meaning of it, but in the way that the water can come up and down and to be saved. Because the atmosphere, I repeat, was not as this atmosphere that we have now. So the Tower of Babel is also related as a pyramid building. In order to reach heaven, in order to be saved from the floods, because at the time after Noah formed the universal the Salvation Army at that time, there were already, I repeat, like three floods or three sinkings of Atlantis. It is written that the last one happened approximately 80,000 years ago, which is the sinking of Poseidonis, which is the island which was in the Atlantic Ocean. It was the last remnant of the Atlantean civilization. So, of course, from that story of the Valley of Shinar, where the people of Babel were building towers, comes the story of Abraham. Abraham appears there. And from Abraham, Isaac, then Jacob, then Joseph, and they go into Egypt, which is precisely, we will say, the different steps of the different races. Because Abraham came from the city of Ur, which was a Chaldean civilization. Because from the Shemites came the Chaldeans, from the Chaldeans the Hebrews, from the Hebrews the Israelites, or the Jews now. But not only them, but all the whole civilization, the Aryan civilization. This is how it's described in the Bible. So when the Israelites, we will say, were the last remnants of the Atlanteans or the sub-race arrived to Egypt, according to the Bible, at that time, was precisely when that was Poseidonis, Matsarim, we will say, in which Moses arrived and takes people into the Gobi Desert. Not only him, but all the great avatars, all the great messengers that were guiding forces at that time in Malkut, in order to form the present civilization. So have you seen there the story written in the Bible about the universal flood has to be read related with four great floods. Because Noah in the ark is related with the third flood, in which the people were being organized and forming the route for the next root race, which is our present Aryan race. And that time is when they received the commandment not to mix with the other races of the Atlantean civilization. Or as the Bible says, with the Egyptians. So the Shemites were not crossing themselves with the other Atlantean sub-races, or the Shemites. But when the last universal flood came and they emigrated to Europe, or what we say specifically to Asia, to the Gobi Desert, then they were commanded to cross themselves with the different survivors in order to form the Aryan race. And this is how the story of the Bible talks, which of course has also a Kabbalistic meaning of Abraham, Isaac, because in every step, as you see, you find that Abraham has a son, with an Egyptian slave, Agar, which is the duality there of the doctrine. Then, when Abraham has a son, which was named Isaac, which is a symbol of the spinal column, the fire that rises there, Isaac had two children, Jacob and Esau. You see the duality then there, which is Kabbalistically speaking, of course, in the Tree of Life. Then you find that Jacob is the one that has the 12 tribes of Israel, which is related, of course, with Malkut. Because the 12 tribes of Israel are related with the 12 zodiacal signs through which the souls enter into this world. At that time, that's why when you read the Bible refers to the world of Malkut at Mazarim. Because Mazarim, Egypt, was at that time the civilization that governed the whole planet, which was the Atlantean civilization. It is necessary to understand that in order to stop referring as Egypt, whatever, as we know it in this Aryan race. Because then there's a lot of controversy about the meaning of it or the origin or what the Bible says in relation with it. But the Bible states in Genesis is in relation with many sub-races, many root races in the past. Evolution and involution of forces. Not only with this Aryan race, which started after the universal flood, the last universal flood, which symbolically, I repeat, is explained in the Bible with Moses leaving Egypt, finally, in order to establish a root race. And Malkut, which is precisely the Sephira related with the 10th card, and what you find there, that above it is a symbol of the Sphinx, which was a symbol which was very known in ancient Atlantis. It's an Atlantean symbol, inherited by the actual Egypt. Why? Because Egypt was one of the cities, or we will say one of the areas that belonged to Atlantis. There were some lands of Atlantis that didn't sink. Egypt was one of them. Spain was one of them. Mexico was one of them. And that's why you find the similitude between Egypt and Mexico, and related with pyramids. But Spain, for instance, is part of Atlantis. So that's why if you want to find remnants from the cities of Atlantis, you will find it there in the very bottom of the oceans of Portugal and Spain. Because Spain itself, I repeat. And that's why the so-called gypsies are, for instance, the remnants, of course, I said, of the Egyptians, which are everywhere. So above, you see that above this wheel of Ezekiel, or the wheel of Pythagoras, which symbolizes precisely the wheel of Samsara, that we have to go out of it, is precisely the symbol of Egypt, the Malkut related with the negative forces of Klipoth. And in order to go out of there, we have to work with the Sphinx. The Sphinx, of course, is a symbol of the four elements that express through the power of the staff or the sword, which is between the two parts of the Sphinx. When you study the wheel of Ezekiel, you find that Ezekiel describes the four creatures. Hayot HaKadosh, which are precisely where the letter Yod, or the forces of Keter, work. The wings of the Sphinx symbolizes the element air. The face of a human being symbolizes the water, because the human being comes from the water of Yesod. Then the legs of the bull represents the earth, and the paws of a lion, the fire. Those are the four elements. And those four elements, of course, are related in different symbols, not only in the wheel of Ezekiel, but in Pythagoras, the wheel of Pythagoras, or as we put in the website, the Aztec calendar, which in the middle of it, you find the symbol of the yod, or the face, which is always because Keter is related with the head, with the face. And around it, you find, of course, the four elements, or the four sub-rays, root races, that rotate in the Nawi Olin. The Nawi Olin is that precisely Aztec swastika that rotates in order to originate the universe according to the cosmology of the Nahua in Mexico. So that's precisely the great symbol, the four elements rotating in the wheel of Samsara that we have to control. And in order to control, we have to build the vehicles in order to go out of it. But before that, we had to defeat Egypt. Or the book of Revelation says, we had to defeat the great Babylon. This is another symbol here that we had to specify. We had to stop referring at the people of Iraq as the people that deserve to be punished because it's the old Babylon. When the Bible talks about Babylon, esoterically speaking, let me tell you, Kabbalistically, alchemically, how it is referred to it. When in the beginning of the creation of this planet, or this four round, terrestrial round, people still didn't, observe the physical world through the five senses. In the same way that people right now have atrophied their internal senses, and they cannot see the four dimension, the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh, and they think that everything which is above Malkut, the higher dimensions, is just an illusion, something that only the crazy people think about or are belief, because they don't have the senses. At that time, before the earth became crystallized in the three-dimensional world, people also were not crystallized in the three-dimensional world. Because you have to understand that the planet Earth, Malkut, is called the kingdom. Why is it called the kingdom? Because it has mineral kingdom, plant kingdom, human kingdom, and animal kingdom. So the whole kingdoms are for Malkut. So each one of the kingdoms, mineral, plant, animal, and human, are also in the same level in which the planet is as we are right now. So at that time, before the crystallization of the matter into the three-dimensional world, people had physical bodies, but they didn't receive the three-dimensional world in the same way that we don't receive the internal dimensions right now. They were there, but they didn't receive it. That is the story precisely of Adam and Eve. At that time, they were dying, but they were not aware of the three-dimensional world, that they were living their bodies, and they were more in tune with the internal worlds, that they didn't care. You see? You understand that? Do you follow me? Because the sight, the smell, and all the senses of the physical world, of the physical body, were not fully developed as we have right now developed. Now we perceive the physical world complete. We will say more or less complete, because there are some things that we don't see in this three-dimensional world that they are obvious. But at that time, Adam and Eve, who were the symbol of the Lemurian continent, in which the earth started to crystallize in a two-dimensional world. So at that time, the Lemurians, we were before the Atlanteans, were more inside than outside, more in the internal worlds than in Malkut. And that's why they didn't care. I mean, they were not so concerned with death. Then, the great cosmos creators were concerned with it. Because little by little, Lemurians were aware that they had to develop the physical senses in order to be aware of the three-dimensional world according to the law of involution, the descension of the ray of creation. And what happened? Then many discovered that finally the planet was reaching the bottom of the apex of the rounds, finally. And eventually it has to go up in order to return the energy. But those monads that will not do that, they will be identified with the physical world, and therefore they will be in the wheel of Samsara, identify and will go down in devolution, and again in evolution again, and devolution, evolution, as you know, the wheel of Samsara. So they were saying, why are we in this level right now? Eventually we will see the physical world, but we don't want. It's better. We disappear. We don't exist. Because now we are reaching the very bottom. And if we don't succeed in returning into the higher levels, we will be lost in Klipot. And that's precisely the meaning that says that many were trying to commit suicide. Because for there, the physical body was nothing. They were more in tune with the internal worlds. Then the ghost cosmos creators came. And you know the story. Sakaki, Loizos, and all of them, in order to implant in them the Kundavafer organ, which is the organ that helps to crystallize and to go down in order to see the physical world. And that Kundavafer organ is related with the letter Tet, with Lucifer, the tempter. At that time, humanity didn't know fornication. And was that, of course, to implant the Kundavafer organ in order for Tet, which is related with the sense of taste. Related with the mouth, taste. You know, we already explained that. And Yod, because Yod is in relation with the sexual organ hidden within Tet. So behold here the two senses, touch and taste. That's why it is written, when the serpent gave to Eve, which is the serpent related with procreation, Eve tasted. Because the serpent is in relation with the sense of taste. And that's why when you move the tongue, or when somebody wants to imitate a serpent, it takes the tongue out, all the serpentine, right? The taste. But that taste is given through the sex, touch. Because the organ that is in relation with the sense of touch is a sexual organ, is the most sensitive. So we hold there. And this is why, after that eating of that forbidden fruit, which is sex, the senses of the physical world, you know, Eve helps Adam, and Adam, the brain, develops. here on the head, the smell, the sight, the ears, everything up here. That's why in the head, right? And start perceiving the physical world. So that's why it said, and their eyes were open. And not only their eyes, their nose, their ears, all the senses, and they start perceiving more the three-dimensional world. But unfortunately, as you know, the big mistake in the practice of fornication, that some of them, they didn't return after the development because the Kundavafer organ was a necessity at that time. And it's a necessity because the souls, the monads, need to know good and evil, but at a certain limit, in order to return and to become as gods, knowing good and evil. But there was a big mistake, a miscalculation, and the Kundavafer organ was for a long time, which is the tale of Satan. And humanity, instead of returning and acquiring knowledge of good and evil, they keep fornicating and degenerating themselves. So then, they were building in their brain the Great Babylon. Do you understand that? That's why it is written that the Great Babylon is seated in seven hills. These are precisely two eyes, two ears, two nostrils, and the mouth here. Above them is a brain that receives all the information, all the impressions from the physical world in order to build that sinful mind that we have, which is identified with desire. Because we have to conquer desire in order to become gods. Nobody comes an angel or transforms himself into a true human being if he or she doesn't conquer desire. God, the last given by ancient avatars and patriarchs, give certain ways in order for you to stop abusing of desire, especially sexual desire, in order to develop, according to the evolution, your brain. But the real objective of evolution is to create objective reasoning, which is through chastity. But now, everybody has Iraq, Babylon, in their head, in their brain. So Babylon is not only in Iraq. Babylon is in the whole earth. That's why it's calling that in the book of Revelation is Babylon the Great. The great harlot, whose number is 666. It's not a certain person, as many people think. It's all people. This is the mind that we built since that time, of Lemuria until this moment. The great avatars are sending messengers, great angels, to fight against Babylon. And of course, religious people in this day and age, they think that they are very good, and they are just pointing Babylon there in Iraq. Poor people that are also from Babylon as well, but we are also from Babylon. Meanwhile, Eden, that garden that is written in the Bible, symbolically, it's written that was between the Euphrates and the Tigris, the rivers in Asia, that in Iraq. So how come Eden is also there? It's a symbol that we have to understand and comprehend. And of course, in other lecture we say, well, the seven hills upon which the great whore is seated are the seven capital sins. Yes, of course. Beginning with lust, without origin, the origin, you see, I'm telling you, the touch and taste of the serpent giving you lust. And from there come the other senses developed through which we feed pride, anger, greed, gluttony, laziness, which is the outcome of the wrong transformation of impressions. The outcome of desire, which is fed always through the five senses. So do you understand that? Do you follow what I'm explaining here? Because it's related precisely with the creation, the way of creation in Malkut, the way in which evolution and involution transform the forces in different rounds in order for the monad to acquire mastery. Because our monad, our own particular individual Jehovah, our own particular Elohim, because each one of us has his own particular Jehovah. There is not one Jehovah. There are many Jehovahs as people in the earth. There are many Elohim as people in the earth. But they need to conquer. They need to conquer the earth. They need to conquer Mazarim. That's why it's written that when Moses, which was a great avatar at that time, when going into the world of Atzilut, appears before him, Keter. But hidden in the burning bush, which is Da'at, because this is how he expresses. And what is your name? And then his particular individual Elohim said to him, Eheye Asher Eheye. Translation is, I am the one that am. Not as the Bible says, I am the one that I am. I am the one that I am, because I am not that. He is the one that is. He says, send to the people. And he sends Moses to Mazarim, which is between the waters. At that time, Poseidonis, Atlantis. Because precisely the great civilization of that moment was in Kali Yuga. You know very well that every root race has four yugas. And Kali Yuga is the last yuga, where the people degenerate. So Atlantean civilization in the beginning was, of course, beautiful. But in the time of Moses, was a Kali Yuga. And all the great symbols and religions of Egypt were degenerated already. Nonetheless, Moses studied in Egypt, meaning he nourished himself with the doctrine of the Atlanteans, which is a pure Kabbalah. Because now let me tell you another thing. The Atlanteans and the Mayans are the same as well. Mayans and Atlanteans, no difference. It's just a matter of language. So that Kabbalah, he nourished himself with Kabbalah there. Because all the symbols that Moses used are Egyptian symbols. Of course, if you study those symbols in the dead letter, you don't find similitude. But when you go deep down into the symbol of the Egyptians, this is Moses. This is the whole doctrine there. But apply in different way, according to his own knowledge. Because he was one of the founders. He was the first one that wrote the story of this Aryan race. And is written in the Bible. And that book is called Genesis. And the last one that wrote according to this transformation was John the Divine, the book of Revelation. Which is a Kabbalistic books. Really with the same thing. Now, as repeating the same words of Moses, we have to go out of Mazarim. We have to go out of Babylon the Great. But that is not, of course, outside of us. It's inside of us. And the only one that can take us out of there is Keter, the Yod. Because he is the one that nothing is moving into the will of Samsara without the will of Yod Keter, without the will of the Father. That's his law. And that's why he controls the law. The Pharaoh, they say. But it's a symbol. The minister, which is the ego, of course, inside of us. It's that intellect that we have. That's the Pharaoh. He has to come there and to transform, to teach us. And then we have to defeat the Pharaoh by doing the 10 wonders that Moses did. Because if you read the wonders that Moses did before leaving Mitzrayim, Egypt, Malkut, he did 10. Related with the tree of life. And that's why Yod is in relation with the touch, with the hand that touches. Do you remember in this moment, for instance, Michelangelo? He painted how God was making Adam. And if you trace a sign of the infinite between God and Adam and the 16th chapel, you will find the Holy Eight. And that's precisely the symbol of how the Yod creates, because it's two hands touching. One that gives and the other that receives. But this God of Michelangelo is not by himself. Michelangelo painted an Elohim. Of course, he's an old man there, but is carried by cherubim, seraphims around him. Do you remember that, right? Do you see that picture? There are many angels there around. There are many. There's no one. It's Elohim. The only that is one is Adam. So the Elohim are the one that, in that sign of the infinite, create Adam. Because there are many. In other words, that's why it's written that El, God, expresses through the Elohim. And in the middle of the Elohim, he judges. Because every Elohim in itself, every angel, every God, has a spinal column. And Yod, which is a sexual force in Malkut, has to rise in order to make the letter Bav in the spinal column. And this is how the Yod, Keter, is in the middle of the spinal column of the Elohim, the gods and goddesses. And in the middle of them, he judges. Meaning Keter is everywhere and every single god, whether it is from the Hebrew pantheon, whether for the Hindu pantheon, from the Mayan, Aztec pantheon, from the Egyptian pantheon, Keter, the Yod, is the origin of the fire that gives power in each one of them. But we are following Elohim. Or in other words, our own particular monad still needs to work with the Sphinx, which is the symbol of the forces of the elements. It is written that in the temple of the Sphinx, there's a great ordeal that any initiate that enters into that Sphinx, which still exists, let me tell you, but not physically, but in the internal worlds. If you go on the astral plane, you find that temple. And anyone that enters there has to pass the ordeal of the sanctuary. What is that ordeal of sanctuary? That ordeal of the sanctuary encompasses all of the ordeals that you experience during the self-realization. That's why it's written that if you pass the ordeal of the sanctuary, you receive the seal of Solomon, which means a self-realization of your being. But for that, as Moses controlled the four elements, you have to control the four elements. But no one can control the four elements outside if you don't control them inside. The voluptuous hauntings are related with your sexual waters. The salamanders of fire are related with your anger, with your hatred, with your envy, all of those desires and the solar plex that you have to transform into virtues. But if you are always angry, always envious, always greedy, always damning everybody, you are a slave of the salamanders. Because anger is a frustrated desire. And if you are lazy, you want to be saved only by raising your arm, that's laziness. You have to do work. You have to be practical. So you are a slave of the gnomes, because the gnomes are diligent. They are the ones that transmute the lead in the planet Earth into gold, and all the transformation they do in the mineral kingdom made by the gnomes. We have to imitate the gnomes in order to be diligent. Alchemists, moment after moment. And, of course, if we are a slave of Babylon, our own thoughts, our own intellect. We are not controlling the air. In order to control the air, also we control in the way that we speak, we talk. Because according to our thoughts, as are what we talk. So do you realize that? The four elements are within. We have to control them. And for that, we need willpower. That willpower is symbolized by the staff in the middle of the path, which could be also a sword. Willpower. And that willpower is also related with Moses. His willpower. But not that selfish willpower that we have here. Because Moses came from Sinai obeying Yod, obeying Keter, Eheye, says, go and I will be with you. So everything that Moses did in Mazarim, in Malkut, in order to liberate the forces of his own consciousness, was thanks to Elohim, his own particular Yod force, which was in the spinal column, which was the serpent Nahash. So everything that he does is because of the serpent, is because of Yod, is because of Tet. And he succeeds. This is the same that we have to do, to work with. And that is hidden in the Yod. The whole work is hidden in Eol, the number 10. Do you have questions? The only one that is perfect is Keter, Yod. It's the only one who is perfect. When one succeeds and performs the work of Moses, or the work of Buddha, or the work of Jesus, of course, you become an angel. And finally, the higher level is a cosmo-creator. Those cosmo-creators receive different levels of objective reasoning. What is the objective reasoning? The way in which an angel, an archangel, a cosmic creator expresses the wisdom of Keter, or develops. So any cosmic creator has different degree of objective reasoning. There are 6 degrees. The higher degrees is unclad. So in the cosmos, cosmic creators help in creation. That's why it's called cosmic creation. But every planet has different karma. When at that time in Lemuria, humanity started thinking in what I explained, to commit suicide in masses, a cosmic creator was sent here in order to fix the problem and to help humanity to really see the three-dimensional world in order to keep ahead with their evolution in the fourth round. Sakaki came, which is a cosmic creator, and did his job. But it was not the first time that he did it. He did it many times, in different planets. In other words, he was skillful in that. But when he arrived to the planet Earth, he forgot his inner being. In other words, he didn't consult his Keter. Because this planet Earth has different karma. The 3 previous rounds of this planet Earth has a lot of karma. And Sakaki didn't take into account that, because he did many times, so another time, it's okay. If he would consult his inner being, his Keter, Keter would say, wait a minute, my son, you are accustomed to do this, you help this planet, this other planet, but this planet Earth is different. study the previous rounds, and you will see that here you will apply the same theme, but not so long like in the other planets. But he didn't consult his inner being, his Keter. You see, you realize that? You understand that? You comprehend that? That Keter is all-knowing, but sometimes you can do things willingly without thinking that you are doing bad. And that will happen with Sakaki. He committed a mistake. If he would consult his inner being, he wouldn't commit that mistake. But he did it because he forgot his inner being. That's why it is written that Master Jesus, when he received the mission that he was going to perform on the planet Earth, he realizes the great responsibility. And he said, Father, if it's possible, take this cup from me. But not my will, but thine be done. That's the thing that we have to do always. But that's why he committed that mistake. He left the Kundabhava organ too long. And the outcome, the results were what we see already here. It's a great problem. That's why many avatars, many messengers were sent to the planet Earth in order to fix the problem. Because the amount of ego that we have is too much. Normally, humanity create like 10% of ego, as much. So then they go around and along with the other civilizations, other planetary humanities. But in the planet Earth, it is overwhelming. It's 97% of ego. So that's why we are like excluded from the planetary civilizations. They visit us. They observe us. But they realize that we are dangerous. We can infect other civilizations easily. As we, as the Europeans, infected the Mayans when they came here. Mayans were, of course, with ego, but they didn't have diseases, they didn't have all the problems that now this America civilization have because of the Europeans. They brought even syphilis that was unknown in America. So in the same way, that's why the great mistake committed in this planet is, of course, trying to be resolved. And this is why there's a big problem here. Well, beyond Keter, of course, is the absolute, which is perfect, right? But as I'm telling you, when you forget that you have a being, and because you are accustomed to do things good, you commit mistakes. Of course, many avatars and the great messenger that came, that is above all of them, is the Master Jesus, Master Avramento, who is not a cosmic creator. He is a Paramartha Satya. He is already an inhabitant of the Ain. And he came. And he's there, still with the earth, because he's still alive. He's a resurrected master, as many other masters. But according to the pyramid of initiates, Jesus is on top. After him, below, is Buddha Sakyamuni. And many others. Yes? It takes everything since you started. What about the ordeal of the sanctuary? It says, can you explain about it? Yes. The ordeal of the sanctuary begins with public lectures. You hear the lectures, you follow the doctrine, you start practicing, and when you self-realize yourself, you resurrect from the dead, that's the end of the ordeal. Takes all your deals. How many? As many as you pass. Yeah?
When the Kunda buffer was implanted or placed in a Lemurian society, were they supposed to start fornicating, or were they just supposed to know more about desire?
Well, in order to develop the Kunda buffer, they had to fornicate. Right? Of course, there is a certain limit, I mean, because Kundalini only develops when you crystallize the energy in the wrong way. So that's the way in order to fall, because your Malkut is a fallen Sephira. But in order to return, because it is a necessity of the involving ray of creation, because if you don't know evil, how are you going to become a god? How are you going to return into the absolute without knowing evil? You have to know the two. We will say the two forces of evolution and involution. Because good and evil are really two words that are very are placed in the wrong way. Right? Obviously, other humanities receive the Kundavafer organ, and they obtained the knowledge of good and evil without so much hazard. But here in the planet Earth, still, people like to know more evil and more evil, and they worship evil or worship the involution. There's a lot of people there that are in the time of Atlantis as well, and it's because precisely because the karma that we have is so heavy that since Lemuria, they sank into Klipoth. In Atlantis, they sank into Klipoth, and now this humanity, the whole humanity is in Klipoth. We are in Malkut physically, but our psyche belongs to Klipoth. And we need to make a great revolution, transformation. We have to annihilate and to study the book of Revelation that explains the steps in order to annihilate Babylon the Great, the harlot that we have in the head. And that's a transformation, yeah?
When obviously all the animal kingdom adulterates and fornicates, is that their way of crystallizing the lunar bodies?
The thing is that in any planet needs solar vibrations and lunar vibrations. That's why our four kingdoms. You see, for instance, the plant kingdom, the mineral kingdom, they don't have body of desire. But the body of desire started to develop in the animals. And that body of desire is built by nature in the animals in order to crystallize the lunar vibrations that help the inner layers of the planet to stabilize. When we enter into the human kingdom, we are still animals. A human being doesn't fornicate, doesn't spill the semen. Only an animal does it. Because that crystallized. But because when you continue like that, you have to stop being an animal and to continue and to make the transmutation of the forces in order to go up according to the ray of creation, to return, as we explain in Zayin, letter Zayin, to return the energy. But if we don't do it, obviously we continue sinking into Klipoth. And fortifying the ego, the animal ego, which is overwhelmingly strong in each one of us. In Klipoth. Yes?
What kind of karma has Sakaki received for leaving the Kundavafer on for too long?
Well, that, what kind of karma has Sakaki for leaving the Kundavafer organ so long on the planet Earth? Well, that's a karma called Katansia. Katansia is a superior karma related with the gods, related with the cosmic creator, with the angels. And obviously, he has to pay that in the next cosmic day, or Maha Mambantara. This is a problem with the gods, among the gods. But he has to pay it, of course, because nobody can mock the law. That's why we have to be careful what we say, what we teach, because this is related with Katansia. Yes? Well, because Elohim means gods and goddesses. And why? The question is, how do we elaborate about the Elohim on each one of us? We elaborate that with the Tree of Life. Remember that the Tree of Life is a symbol that explains the whole cosmos, the creation, the evolution of the planets and the planet Earth, and as well our own particular individuality. Elohim is many, and we have our own particular Elohim, Keter, Chokmah, Binah. There are three gods and one God, as Christianity says, or three forces and one force. But really, Keter is three, the crowned. Keter is seven in relation with the cosmos creators, the law of seven, the law of Epta, Para, Par, Shinok. 12. Keter is also 12, related with the bottom. Here especially, because in Malkut, everybody enters through Yod into the world. Isn't it that we come from the phallus of our father, the Yod of our father? And Malkut is the woman, the mater, the mother. You see, even the word mater comes from mother in Latin. So the woman receives the Yod of the man. And in her womb, 9 months in the ninth sphere, in Malkut, she creates and delivers. So creation is between Yod and He, or Io, in other words. And that's, of course, that the Yod brings souls into the 12 constellations, because each one of us is related to any zodiacal sign, 12 signs. That are the 12 tribes of Israel. So behold, Yod is also related with 12, and related with 24, the 24 elders of the book of Revelation. So Yod is also related with 48. Yod is everywhere, because God is everywhere. In synthesis, we will say, everything is in Yod, but in potency. But God, Yod, is an activity in few of His creations. Only those that self-realize Yod. And that is Elohim. Elohim is within and without. Inside and out. Do you have any other question?
What are the levels of being?
The levels of being. The levels of being are related with that we are explaining here. The higher level is the level of Shemesh, or as we said, the unclad level, in which we really attain a lot of objective reasoning. The lower level, well, as we are in the lower level, trying to understand. Yeah, at that time, northern Africa was the coast of Atlantis. South Africa was part of it, but not most of the continent of Africa was in the ocean, sinking in the ocean, on the bottom of the ocean. So at the time of Atlantis, Spain was the coast of Atlantis, as well as Egypt, as well as Mexico, were the coast of them. With the sinking of Atlantis, then the land changed. Many lands emerged and formed the great continent of Africa and America as well, because at that time South America was only the north of South America. But with the emerging came Argentina, for instance, Brazil, where you find the big jungles, and many other lands that were before in the bottom of the ocean. So the geography or the physiognomy of the earth was not the same. It's changing always. Yeah, in the top of the mountains of Spain, you find seashells. And many other places you find weird things because of the earth. And as well, not only that those lands were the coast of the great continent, but as well, the axis of the earth were different. What now is poles were Ecuador. And what now is Ecuador were poles. Equator. The equator was the poles, and the poles were the equator. And the Himalayas mountains also you find, you see, those seashells, many sea creatures, yeah?
Regarding control, some control issues, what interested me was when you said that you need to control the elements within you first. Mm-hmm. Talking that you
is that something, is that a written procedure, or is it something inside you that tells you this is not a good time to talk, or what? How do you?
In order,
control process?
Yeah. The question is, how do we control what we talk, what we say, in order to control ourselves? Well, that implies a lot of meditation, because you have to learn how to hear your intuition. The intuition is the voice of your inner monad, your inner Elohim, your inner Jehovah that is giving you. But for that, you see, for instance, Kabbalah means to receive. You have to learn how to receive the information of your being in order to give it, in order to explain it. And for that, you have to open your heart. And that is by remembering God from moment to moment, from second after second. You see, because God is omnipresent. He's hearing now. So that is, God has form and has no form. So then you have to remember that it's within you. Part of that is within you. That's why we said the particles of pain of Keter are within our body, suffering. And that's why Moses is sent to liberate those. But that's willpower that we need in order to exercise that remembrance from moment to moment to our inner God in order to liberate those parts. And by listening to our inner Elohim, by meditating and by awakening the consciousness, is how we learn what to say. The moment in which we have to be silent. The moment in which we want to speak. If you follow that, you know the moment in which you do charity. And you shouldn't do charity. Because God knows everything. Unfortunately, we listen always to Babylon the Great. She is the mind. And makes a mess of everything.
So does that mean that time is that component to control time?
Time doesn't exist as we understand it. We have to be here and now. Not in the past, not in the future, here and now. Because God is always there in the present. It's a continuous active of life that enters through your senses that needs to be transformed. But unfortunately, we are slaves of time, which is our mind. We always remember, you see, time is related with traditions, customs, all that that we have in the mind. People, for instance, are afraid to enter into the path because they have to renounce their race, their blood, many things. That's why we have in the physical body two types of blood. The venom is called, right? Blood, which is the impure blood. Venous. It's impure blood that is created in the liver. You see, the liver is where we have nefesh, the animal appetites. So there where the blood is created. And this is how we behave animalistically. But thanks to nous, which is in the left ventricle of the heart, which is the atom that obeys the inner God, which intuition is, purifies the blood by sending the impure blood in the heart to the lungs. And then we purify, but now we have made of the atmosphere a filthy thing, a filthy filter. You know, it's a smog. We should go, for instance, to the forest and only to purify with pure oxygen. Because we exhale poison, which the plant takes and transforms into oxygen. You see, we exhale poison because we are full of poison. And we breathe the oxygen that the plants give. And only to purify the blood. That purification is an action of Aleph, which is the wind, the air, the Ruach. And the blood circulates after that. But we always divide it into impure blood and good blood. So therefore, we have to work in a self-realization until the whole blood is purified. And that is only done by the fire, which is, of course, Christ. It's a transformation of alchemy. Yeah? A Elohim.
No, Elohim, our
Elohim.
And the cosmic creator.
Wait, the cosmos creators are angels or archangels or are monads, which are in contact, directly in contact, with the angels of Or, which is the source of life from the absolute. Our Elohim is also in contact with the angels of through the cosmos creators. So the Elohim, in other words, our own particular Elohim, belongs to a ray. And that ray is a cosmos creator that is in contact with the same essence of Or. It was we depend of it. We have, of course, to transform ourselves in order to be directly dependent from the essence of Or. But that implies self-realization of the being. That's a great work. Meanwhile, before reaching that level, we depend on the cosmos creators. We depend on the angels, which are above our Elohim. Because all of us are fallen. Any fornicator, his Elohim is a failure. Anyone that self-realizes, his Elohim is a conqueror. The monads of this planet Earth are failures. Because most of the people here are fornicators. And thank you very much. Next lecture will be the 11th Arcanum. Have a nice weekend.
The presentation of this lecture was made possible by donations from listeners like you. Help Telema Press reach more souls. Make a donation by visiting GnosticTeachings.org. For questions and deeper understanding of this lecture, we invite you to participate in the discussion forum available for free on our website. Thank you for your support. May all beings be happy.